Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National All Employment Network Payments conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. You may also enter questions at any time throughout the webinar by using the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. Janet Cousin, please go ahead.
Thanks, Shay, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our July All-EN Payments call. Thanks again for joining us today. This is Janet Cousin, and joining me is Deborah Tennessee. She is manager of the Ticket Operations Department for the program. And we also have Natalie Findeldorfer, a member of the Social Security Administration of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support, that's on the line with us as well. Our focus today will be to review the most common help desk questions and requests that we have received in recent months. Many of those questions are related to use of the new ticket portal, and others are process or policy types of questions that really haven't changed much, but we want to just take some time to review those. We will be using a presentation for the call, and that presentation has been posted on the website at yourtickettowork.com. If you'd like to follow along there, it's under the events page. And as usual, you'll be invited to ask questions at the end of the presentation. Remember to not provide any details regarding personal cases that you're working with your clients on. And we will be answering those questions via the chat room as well. And certainly if we're not able to answer any questions, we'll have someone follow up with you to address those at a later time. Well, we have a lot of information to cover, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, so our agenda, again, we're going to be focusing on some key portal process issues and items that we think will be beneficial for review for those of you that are portal users. And then we're going to take some time to review the non-portal processes as well. There's a couple of key things there that we want to make sure are clear and understood. The other thing that I want to take a few minutes to review is the outreach process that we use for requesting information based on work cases that we have in the system. And then lastly, we'll review some common reasons for denials. We want to make sure that you're clear on what the requirements are for submitting payment requests and how to avoid having work cases denied. And then we'll also provide an update on the expanded e-pay process, which we've mentioned previously. All right, so first step is to look at some of those key portal processes for all of you current ticket portal users. The first thing is to talk about the focus of the portal, and the ticket portal is designed around two main lists. We have the beneficiaries currently assigned to me and beneficiaries formerly assigned to me. If you plan to take an action on a specific beneficiary, the easiest way to get to that option is to navigate to the beneficiary from one of these two lists. We've had a few calls this month related to ticket assignments, and these two screens are the best ways to verify the ticket assignment status prior to submitting your payment request. So again, portal users, you should see these from the main menu on the portal, and on the left side here, you have the currently assigned to me and then formerly assigned to me, where you can review and research beneficiary details information. Now, the new ticket portal also checks to see if there are sufficient earnings in SSA's records each time a payment request is initiated. If there are sufficient earnings, you will receive a message as shown in the center there, TWP earnings already established for the claim month. And you do not need to provide any evidence in these cases. If earnings at SGA or above were not found for the claim month, then you'll receive a message as in the example at the top there, indicating that you must add earnings by clicking the Yes radio button under the Add Earnings option. There's lots of different messages that the system may display when you're submitting your payment request. And the key message here is to look for that important information box. Or as in the example on the bottom, that message indicates that a payment has already been made for the claim month that was requested. Again, these messages are very important in guiding you through the payment request process and directing you on what action you should take. Another nice feature that was introduced with the June release of the portal is the ability to generate an additional fax cover sheet. You may need to generate an additional fax cover sheet if, for example, you deleted the original cover sheet form that was generated. You need to send in additional documents after you faxed in the original set of documents that for your request. You may have a coworker who created the initial fax cover sheet and now they're on vacation and they forgot to fax in the documents and you need to get those documents in before the diary expires. So there's various reasons why you may need to generate an additional fax cover sheet, and there's an easy way for you to do so. It's accessible from the action screen, which you can get to from the View Pending Payments for Me screen, and it will also prompt you to select the type of document you plan to fax in. So the first screenshot with the red arrow there is indicating the More Actions list where fax additional information is an option, and the second window on the lower right is the next screen you'll see where it's asking you to indicate which type of document you plan to send in. Once you make these selections, you will be given the option to, well, a new fax cover sheet will be generated, and you can save that fax cover sheet and print and fax in your documents with it, or again, append it to your electronic files and use your eFax solution to send that fax in. Please, please, please ensure that the barcoded fax cover sheet that is generated is the first page of the fax transmission when you send in your fax request. You should not use a business cover sheet when transmitting these faxes. If the barcoded fax cover sheet is not the first page, then our fax server will not be able to receive and automatically update and associate your fax to the work case. So it's very important to ensure that that barcoded fax cover sheet is the first page of your transmission. You can include multiple faxes with one transmission. So you've processed two payment requests, for example. You have two different fax cover sheets. You have two documents for the first fax cover sheet, and you have three documents for the next fax cover sheet. So you have a total of seven pages. You can certainly take all seven pages, put them together with the fax cover sheet and the documents behind them, and transmit all seven in one transmission. Our fax server will recognize the barcoded page and process the two documents behind it, then see the second barcoded page and process that with the documents behind it. So there is a lot of logic there, and you're welcome to do that if that's what's best for you. All right, so the last key feature that we want to mention today is the Show Fax Status feature. This also came in the June release, and it gives you the ability to check the status of those faxes, those barcode faxes that you send in. So again, from the Pending Payments for Me screen, you can click on that actions link that we've mentioned before, and one of the options there is to show fact status, as we see in the first screenshot where the red arrow is. Once you choose show fact status, the next screen below is displayed. And again, in the case of a coworker that's on vacation, this screen will indicate the date the fax was requested, who requested that fax, and if it was transmitted and received, the receipt date will be filled in. If it's blank, then you know that we haven't gotten it yet. So this is a good way for you to check the status of those fax transmissions. All right, so another question that we have received is associated with how to check the status of your payment request. Now, in the new ticket portal, there's actually two separate screens available to you that will provide that status. The first one, and this is a screenshot of the main menu of the portal, under the payment section, the first two options here are those status report options. So the very first one is view payments already made to me. This option will include all payments that have been processed. So either they've been paid to you, they're in the process of being paid, or they have been denied. And so you'll see all of those closed and completed work cases listed through that menu. The other option is to view all pending payments for me. And this one is just that. It includes all payments that are still open and being processed. And it includes all of those that may have a diary status with some information that we're still waiting from you with details associated with that. All right, so from those two status report options, the other common question that we've received is associated with, well, how do I download this information? Both of those reports do have an option to download the entire list to an Excel file. Now, this is a configuration setting, and while most users should have this visible to them, we have had a couple of instances where people have reported that it's not visible to them, and we have to go in and do a change on their user settings. So if you do not see this feature, please give a call to our systems help desk, or you can send an email message to them, and we'll be happy to check those settings for you. But you should be able to download your reports using this feature. And there's some other options here that you'll see associated with help screens and printing options. Again, if you're in the pending payments for me and there's a yes under the diaries column, there's a diary code list that's available, and certainly if there is a denial code indicated for denied claims, then you can see that code and identify the list of denial codes through this screen as well. So these are the key features that we wanted to review quickly with you and make sure that you're familiar with and are utilizing. They're very good features for you. They're helpful for you to become self-sufficient. But certainly, if you have any questions or need any help, you don't hesitate to give us a call to either the Payments Help Desk team or the Systems Help Desk team. I want to also put a plug in right now in regards to the weekly portal orientation sessions that we have been hosting each Wednesday since the launch of the new portal. We will have another session tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Now, this is exclusively for current portal users. You can attend as many sessions as you like. And it is all of the details on how to participate in this orientation session are available on our Ticket Portal Training and Resources secure site, which you have access information that was included in your welcome email message. It includes ticket portal features, details. There's the self-paced training module out there, and there's other support materials like a detailed user guide. So please plan to participate in that session if you haven't already done so. All right, so the next thing that we'll take a few minutes to talk through are these non-portal processes, and for those non-portal users, what steps you need to take. So in regards to split payments, so we've had a few calls associated with, well, how do I send in my split payment documents through the new portal? And as of right now, the only option available for faxing in documents is for the 1401 split payment request document. So a few slides ago when I showed you how to generate an additional fax cover sheet, one of the document types there was the 1401 split payment request form. So if you have an existing work case, and you've been notified that there's a potential split available, and you were asked to complete a 1401, you do have the ability to generate a fax cover sheet and send that 1401 in using the fax cover sheet. However, the other documents that are required for split payments, the service records, the acknowledgement of the split decision agreement, those documents must be faxed into the operation support manager fax line. And then any manual payment request forms do need to be faxed into us as well. So neither of these scenarios can be processed through the ticket portal at this time. So let's look at how to submit those manual payment requests. So again, the preferred method of submitting payment request forms is to use the ticket portal, which actually the portal doesn't even require you to complete a form. It's all online and through the various screens. So we certainly want you to take advantage of the streamlined processing and real-time updates. However, if you are not able to use the new ticket portal for any reason, then you also have the option to complete a payment request form manually, which is available on our website under the Forms tab in the Payments section. And once that form has been completed, you can fax the form in with your evidentiary evidence and documentation to the Operation Support Manager fax number as shown here. You can also mail that completed form to us at the P.O. box that's included here. Now, again, we do need to have a completed payment request form for these manual requests. And certainly, as on the previous slide, if you're sending in any split payment documentation, you can just include a fax cover sheet of your own business fax cover sheet with those split payment documents and fax those into us. Now, the last bullet is explaining how, if you need to check the status of your manual request, you can certainly contact our payments help desk team. We do need to have a few business days to process those requests. And certainly if you're sending in the details, and including an SSN number, we need to have the email message encrypted to prevent any confidential information being shared. All right, so now let's take a look at these outreach requests that I mentioned earlier. When you have a work case that we have placed in a diary status, and again, you'll see that in your pending payments for me screen, or we receive manual payment requests and there's information that the payment specialists need from you, then we will send out an outreach request for information to the contact for your EN via email. These email messages are important. They're time sensitive because our diary period is a 9 business day period. And certainly if we do not hear from you within that period, the work case will be denied. So we do want to make sure that you review these messages in a timely manner. Pay attention to what information is missing or what information is requested. We are now including the detailed steps on how you can go about generating that additional fax cover sheet so that if you do need to send in documents, then you have the steps on how to go in and generate a new cover sheet to do so. So please pay attention to these and respond to them as quickly as possible. All right, so the next thing that we'd like to do is take a few minutes to just cover common reasons for denials. Why are so many claims being denied? And actually, that has improved somewhat. But let's take a look back at fiscal year 2014. I've used this in a previous presentation, but this does show the top five reasons payment requests were denied in 2014. And halfway into 2015, the top reason for denials are still because the EN is requesting outcome payments for a beneficiary that is receiving cash benefits. So if an EN requests outcomes for a beneficiary that's in current pay status, i.e. they're receiving federal cash benefits, the payment request will be denied. And as you can see, for fiscal year 14, that was 44% of the denials that we had thus far. While this may not be something that you have complete visibility to, you're welcome to call us if there is a situation where it's denied and you need clarification on that. And the payment help desk team can provide that confirmation for you. The second most common reason for denials is due to prior earnings. So the Social Security Administration takes into consideration the earnings a ticket holder receives prior to ticket assignment. And as it states in the RFQ, Phase 1 milestone payments may not be available to an EN if the beneficiary achieves that milestone within the most recent 18-month period prior to ticket assignment. A common practice to recognize a prior earnings denial is to use the 18-month look-back tool. Now, the tool can be downloaded from the Ticket to Work website. If you go again to the Information Center and look under the Forms section, you'll find the tool, which is a spreadsheet there. And you can plug in information and determine if the 18-month look-back is in effect or not. Phase 1 milestone payments may not be available to an EN if the beneficiary achieved that milestone within that most recent 18-month period prior to the ticket assignment. So, again, this is just a review of an existing tool that still may be helpful for you. Now, the new ticket portal does do that check for you, and you may receive an actual message in that information box letting you know that the claim month that you're requesting is not available due to 18-month look-back. All right, now the third most common reason for denials in 2014 were related to the earnings amounts not meeting the specific criteria for payment. Now, no Phase 1 milestone payments will be available to an EN if the beneficiary previously was served by a state vocational rehabilitation agency and was rehabilitated, i.e., you know, they were working at the time the state vocational rehab agency successfully closed the case. So the best way to avoid this type of denial is to properly calculate the beneficiary's earnings for each pay period. And again, we have this earnings estimator tool that's still available for you through the website. And it can be used to help determine when a beneficiary's earnings might qualify for payment under the ticket program. So again, under the Information Center Resource Documents section on our website, you can find this tool. Now, with the programmatic check of earnings that the ticket portal is doing automatically at this time a payment request is submitted, this hopefully won't be a top reason for denials anymore because our system is programmatically checking for qualifying earnings. All right, so during intake with EN, We do highly recommend that you ask beneficiaries about any prior history of receiving VR services and whether they are working at the time of their VR case closure. EMS can also check the secure provider portal by selecting beneficiary ticket history from the main menu under the assignments area, and that also includes information on prior VR services and successful closed VR cases. This is something that the portal also checks programmatically each time a payment request is submitted. So if there is a successful closure that's detected on file, the portal will not provide the phase one milestone payments as an option for you to choose when you submit your payment request. So again, this is one of the denial reasons that we've had last year, and hopefully, again, moving forward with a lot of the automation, this may no longer be the case in the future. All right, so here's some general information about how to avoid these payment denials. First, request pay stubs and employer earnings statements from your beneficiaries when you're performing your intake or once the ticket has been assigned to you. And this will give you an idea of if any of the milestones are available to you. The other option is to check the ticket portal. So again, if you're a registered user of the ticket portal, you can log in and check for VR closure status if the ticket was previously assigned to a VR. So to check assignability, you can go to the individual ticket status and use history page by clicking on the check assignability by SSN link from the main menu. And this page will allow you to check the assignability of a single Social Security number. And you can enter that SSN to review history and use and current status. This screen is also the first step for assigning any new tickets. And in the new ticket details there, you'll see the ticket number, the mail date, termination date if it's applicable, and the ticket status, whether it's in use or not in use. The last payment on the ticket will also be displayed. So you might see that it indicates there's no ticket payments yet, the last ticket claim month paid with a, you know, the month and year and the phase one milestone or what have you. That's also displayed there. So based on the earnings in SSA systems, the last 24 months will display. If the ticket was previously assigned, you can see the name of the organization by clicking on the EN or the SVR hyperlink. The SVR closure status has two possible options. It'll say yes for successful closure or N for unsuccessful closure. And if the ticket is assignable, you'll see the assign a ticket button, and that which is shown here in the middle of the screen is the option you have to assign a ticket. So again, it's another key feature of the new portal that allows you to verify this information prior to submitting your payment request. So that's the final page of our denials review and some tips and tricks on how you can avoid denials, ways that you can improve your processes. All right, so let's talk about the new e-pay process. Last month we reviewed this during our call. There was a July 2nd announcement that was sent out also indicating the details associated with the expanded e-pay process. And just before this call, probably an hour and a half ago, we have an additional Dev Delivery announcement that was sent out to everyone with some additional details. So just to review, this new e-pay process is beginning at the end of July. Actually, this week, we will be running this new expanded e-pay process for the first time. It will replace all existing e-pay processes. So in the month of June, we did run for the last time those current e-pay processes, including UAP, the WIB process, what's referred to as NICE, N-Y-E-S-S, and the VREN process. All of those were run for the last time in June. Now, the key exciting thing about this new process is there's no sign-up. No sign-up, no forms to fill out. All active tickets will be considered as part of this process. Initially, it will be a monthly process where we'll be checking the system for earnings and we'll create a file for all beneficiaries that qualify you for a payment. We'll analyze those cases and process payments for each case where a payment is qualified. And with this expansion of ePay and it being available to all ENs, there really is not going to be any need for certification payment requests. So I encourage all of you to check your email if you haven't yet today. Look for that more detailed notice that was sent out today that does speak to this updated process, does confirm that we will be running the very first expanded ePay process this week, again, for all employment networks. And there will be no longer a need for certification requests, and those we will no longer accept as of July 31st. So this week we will no longer at the end of this week accept any certification payment requests. So that's it. Those are the key things. There was a lot of information that we reviewed today, and we'd like to accept any questions that you have about any of the topics that we covered. Shay, if you can go ahead and remind everyone how to request to submit a question and open up the lines for us.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press pound. One moment, please, for the first question. And your first question comes from the line of Eugenia Cox. Your line is open, Eugenia.
Hi, this is Eugenia Cox from Oregon BR.
Hi, Eugenia.
Hey, I had put a question on the chat that hadn't been responded to with regards to when you go into those first two lists in the portal, the tickets assigned to you and the tickets that have been past assigned to you.
Yes.
And our ability not to be able to look somebody up by name or by social security number. And first of all, I want to know why, because what's going to happen to us is when we pull lists, there are going to be over 1,000 people. And so we're going to have to export that list. And then we're going to have to highlight the ones for TPR, and then we're going to have to go in and scroll and look for those people.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Eugenia, this is Deborah. I had responded to that by just basically saying we would take your ticket assignment questions and pass it on to the appropriate staff because we really aren't able to address ticket assignment issues on this call. But because that is a concern, and I've seen a couple other ENs identify some ticket assignment issues, we're going to take those questions that you submitted.
Ticket assignment issue.
Oh, it's a pain?
No, this is about just being able to look up a person to take any actions.
Okay.
Because we don't have the ability to do that in either one of those lists. Now, you do for payments. When you go down, you can actually enter a social security number, but there's no ability to look somebody up on your list, just an individual person.
Now, just so that I'm understanding your question, you initially mentioned that from the main menu, are you referring to the view pending payments for me and the view payments already made to me?
The first
assignment list? Okay.
The first section.
Okay, in the assignment list. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll send that up to the system staff at SSA. I don't believe anyone is on the phone from SSA who could deal. We had a systems person on some of the calls who's dealing directly with Social Security system staff who are working on the portal. So we'll take that issue back directly to Social Security and see, you know,
yeah.
see what they could do with that.
And anybody, you know, that has to pull up individuals to just see, you know, stat check or do any actions with the person is going to have the same problem.
Okay.
Now, I'm saying it because we're you know, we're a state agency. We're this VR agency, so we're going to have a lot more folks.
Right.
But actually,
Eugenia, right after you submitted your inquiry into the portal, a couple other ENs did come back and said that they had that issue as well.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, you said that all ENs will go into this ePay. Are you including the state VR agencies that are also acting as ENs?
Yes. 14 are ENs who, and we had them identified as either ongoing support or phase one only milestone VR ENs. You're all included under ePay.
Okay. Oh, cool. So that means that our quarterly payments will now be monthly?
Whenever Social Security has earnings, we right now the file will be run monthly. Hopefully, one day soon, it will be a daily process, but for right now, it's monthly.
Cool. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Good questions, Eugenia.
And your next question comes from the line of Mark Marsh. Mark, your line is open.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. I actually have two questions. The first one is regarding SEI, self-employment income.
Right.
How do we process monthly self-employment income payment requests? Does the beneficiary have to go to the Social Security office and provide proof of earnings and related expenses at the beginning of the month following the self-employment income month?
Let me tell you, very rarely, very, very, very rarely do we see self-employment monthly income posted to any Social Security system. The way self-employment runs right now is it used to be under the certification payment request where EN would submit their SEI forms and the beneficiary would list their gross expenses and all that, the net income. That information would come into us, and if Social Security does not have annual earnings for that individual, we wait until we receive that information from the IRS divided by 12 and come up with an estimated monthly amount.
So, in other words, there will be no payments to the EN for self-employment beneficiaries until after they have filed their income tax return?
If there is a self-employment beneficiary that does have monthly earnings posted that satisfies a payment type, yes, we will pay you for that.
Okay.
That's why we're saying that we no longer need certification requests because most SEI cases, there are no earnings, monthly earnings posted. We have to wait for that annual report. But there are times that if the earnings are there, we're going to pay you under the ePay, expanded ePay process.
Okay. Okay, that will work. And the other question was on a case closure for the state VR. If I have a beneficiary who started working while his ticket was assigned to a VR and got a job for 4 hours a week and is very unhappy with the service being provided by the state VR, so he wants to request that his ticket be unassigned or his case be closed, and I guess that would be unsuccessful closure, which would then make his phase one payments be available to the EN. He hasn't worked in the past 24 months. He hasn't worked at trial work. So the individual just started working at 4 hours and wants to assign his ticket to the EN, to our EN, and leave the state VR. So I guess the question is, can the beneficiary request case closure, and would it be considered unsuccessful if that person is working, it's working, but below trial work?
I'm not sure for the rules for, I just thought that, and maybe some from SSA is on the phone, I believe that successful just means they are working. I don't think that it is given a dollar amount for that. I know for look-back earnings, they have to be at trial work level, but for the VR closure, if someone who's at SSA can confirm this, I just believe they have to be working. It shows that they're working.
Even though
this is Natalie. Let me try to get clarification on that real quick.
Okay. Natalie is with Social Security. She's going to try to find someone from the VR team.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think I lost you.
No, you're still here. She
okay.
has to go. We might have to come back to that answer because
okay.
she has to go get someone. But as soon as she does, we'll bring come back to
Thank
that
you.
Question.
Okay. That's
And your next question comes from the line of Sarah Janiso. Your line is open, Sarah.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
So in regards to the email that was sent today about the e-pay, we will no longer be able to send Qbert requests, right?
There is no such thing as a Qbert. We're not producing those anymore. But
yes, I understand that you're not producing them, but we had printed one out before it was taken down from the portal, and we were told that it was okay for us to continue submitting requests with this information.
The information you have in your Qbert request, in your Qbert, that you have any old one, Social Security has it in its record, in their earnings record. So if their earnings there, those beneficiaries will be identified in the e-pay process.
Okay.
To answer your question directly, Saran, effective Friday the 31st, we will no longer accept any certification requests, payments, which includes those that you were submitting using that Qbert report. But what Deborah is confirming is that the expanded e-pay process is using that same resource that the Qbert report is generated, and will be able to identify payments for you that you qualify for as part of the expanded e-pay process.
Okay, and is there a time frame for that? Because, like, the email says that if you have tickets that you do not receive payments, you may request evidentiary payments on them. Is there a time frame that we should wait for before we can submit our own evidentiary payments for those people?
We're going to run our e-pay file. It's being run this week. So over the next 2 weeks, you should get the results of our e-pay file, either a payment or you don't get a payment. I will wait until after that two-week period because Social Security, again, has all those earnings captured in their database. Now, it's possible you may not get a payment and the earnings are there. Earnings is not the only criteria for making a payment. It could be a payment status issue or the beneficiary has entered the outcomes period at one point and gone back into current pay. There are a number of reasons other than earnings that you may not be eligible for a payment. However, after that two-week period, if you believe that there are some claims you have not been paid for, you do have to submit primary evidence, which means pay stubs, work number, or earnings for payer statement.
Okay. In regards what you just said, we have been noticing that the work number is not, a lot of the employers are not showing the net amount.
Net amount is an optional field in the portal. So if you don't have the net amount, then you can still submit your payment request. The required fields are the dates and the gross earnings.
Oh, okay. All right, because we received an email letting us know that they would not accept that because they didn't have the net on them.
We do need to know withholdings were made, and that's not a contractor or SEI. I think maybe in that particular situation. And then we do receive supplemental earnings statements with some of those that doesn't have all the information listed.
So in your case, the key things to understand is, well, first of all, the portal doesn't require net earnings as a field that you must provide with each submission. However, the rules associated with payment request process are still in place. So if the pay stubs or the work number report does not include any withholdings, then that may be the reason why an outreach request was sent to you to say, hey, we need to have you complete a self-employment income, supplemental earnings statement or an employer-prepared earnings statement that provides that level of detail in order to process your payment request. Is that clear?
Yes. Okay. And I also had one question that I asked on the chat, and I was told to ask it over the phone. In regards to a denial reason of a beneficiary being in current pay and the EN trying to request outcome payment.
For an outcome payment, the criteria for outcome payment, the beneficiary must have earnings at a substantial gainful activity level, SGA or greater, and they must be in a non-pay or suspense payment status due to worker earnings. If they're in current pay, we cannot take outcome payment.
Correct. Yes. But specifically for SSI beneficiaries, a lot of times beneficiaries fail to report their income to their local offices. And when they have made over that SSI cap amount,
mm-hmm.
to zero out their benefits, and they're still being in current pay. And we have clients that they're still in current pay for years, and they're still, they have been earning over that cap for like years, and they're still receiving their check. So I understand why those payments are not honored to the ENs when we have proof that they're making over the SSI cap, even though they're incorrectly receiving their SSI check.
Well, whenever you send in any pay stubs, if you have the extra ones in Awesome, here at Maximus, we do keep that information into Social Security's different systems. So at some point, they do get that information. So whether the beneficiary reports it or not, if you send us in pay stubs, we do keep those earnings.
Okay, but we're being denied those payments, even though we're showing that they're over the SGA amount for SSI beneficiary.
I understand, but we cannot make those payments until Social Security field offices make the change to place that beneficiary into a non-pay status.
Okay. On last orientation call that was made on July 22nd,
mm-hmm.
They didn't mention their name, but I'm quoting, all of the earnings that you're submitting to us are verified by our payment specialist, and they are updated into the system. It is the same system that the local field offices rely on to verify earnings. So is this incorrect?
Let me say one thing. Maximus does not verify earnings. What Maximus does is look at the primary evidence that comes in, and we make an evaluation whether or not it is acceptable, meaning that it's a valid pay stub, meaning that it looks like it's a valid employer who's taken up withholdings or whatever. Then we key that information into Social Security systems. Now, Social Security performs their own verification from that process. They verify earnings, but Maximus does not.
Okay, so when we send pay stubs to Maximus,
yes,
then the Social Security is verifying that information, and then eventually it will get updated in Social Security system?
Yes. They'll switch it from an alleged to a verified verified earnings, yes.
Okay. If we get denied for those payments, you're saying that we should maybe try at a later time, maybe a couple months later?
Yes, and you could even contact maybe the field office, but again, it's something that Social Security field offices, it's an action they have to take. It's outside of Maximus control.
Okay, would ENs be able to report earnings for beneficiaries?
I'm told that some ENs have attempted to do this at field offices, and they may have problems since they're not the beneficiaries, but again, ENs do send us proof of earnings into Maximus, and we do key those earnings. And we key them into Social Security system.
So you may be dealing with a timing issue, whether it's something that you guys are sending into us, we are keying it into the SSA database, and, versus the timing of when the beneficiary is reporting it to the local field office and the local field office is keying it in and it's being verified. I'm not really sure, but as Deborah mentioned, you know, what was shared in the orientation session is that we are entering information that you send to us into the SSA system, and it is the same source that the local field office should be keying in information and eventually will be verified by SSA in that same system. So, you know, whether there's a delay with the beneficiary reporting and the local field office updating or the timing of us keying in what you send to us, again, the commitment for processing payment requests is the 30-day turnaround. With the automation that's occurred, we're actually processing payment requests a lot faster than that. So that information is keyed into SSA system with each payment request that we are reviewing for payment. I hope that's helpful.
Yep, yep, it is. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Shelley Paquette. Shelley, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Hey, Shelley.
Hi. I am calling about the recent breach that's occurred and just wondering if there's any notification that's going to be sent out to Ian's. I'm looking at a website, opm.gov, OPM, and it says that those that were included in background investigations of, I'm sorry, investigation records of current, former, and prospective federal employees and contractors. And I believe that was the title of some of the stuff we filled out doing our background checks, was part of the breach that they discovered in June of 2015. So I'm wondering, especially since we access our SSA records, then through us, we get to the portal, which then accesses all of our beneficiaries. Are we hearing anything, you know, as far as a notification, as far as what maybe we should be doing or anything like that?
Well, Shelley, thank you for bringing that to attention. I know it's an important concern of everyone. Now, unfortunately, in this forum, we're focused on payment-related issues and questions, so we don't have a specific answer for you. However, there was a recent Gov Delivery announcement with an update to that. I would strongly suggest if you have any additional follow-up questions related to that, you can certainly follow up with your account manager. I believe it also was discussed during the All EN call, and that may be a more appropriate forum, but we certainly don't have
to. Yeah, I'm not able to.
Yeah.
Next week I'm not able to get onto the EN call. That's why I jumped onto this one when I seen this.
Oh, okay. Well, excellent. Well, you know, take a look at that other Gov Delivery announcement that was sent out, and I think it was yesterday, and then you can certainly follow up with your account manager, and they may be able to provide some additional details for you.
And you said there was something possibly on the previous EN call?
I'm not sure, you know, but that's the forum where this would
right.
be that would be addressed.
All right.
You can certainly
well, thank
check
you.
The yourtickettowork.com event page and the transcript and the agenda for the all EN, well, all of the national calls are posted there. And
okay.
if you're not able to join next week, you can certainly follow up after the call and check for that those details online as well.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Shelley.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And your next question comes from the line of Karen Heigl. Karen, your line is open.
Actually, Scott on our team is going to ask the question. So.
Okay.
I just got a quick question about the faxing, and a lot of what you said has been reiterated in previous calls, so I don't want to reinvent the wheel here.
Sure.
In the event that we ever have to fax anything over, now we're on ePay, so it's most likely improbable, but in case we have to send any ancillary documentation with that cover sheet, you just said on this phone call that through the portal you'd be able to get a status update on whether or not that was received or not. The question that I have is if we send it on our fax machine and we get a confirmation, how long does it typically take turnaround time for you guys to receive that and process that? What would be a reasonable time to do follow-up in the event that we did have to fax anything over, whether it's for earnings or any further ancillary documentation regarding an open ticket?
Well, probably the time that it takes from you, for you to walk from your fax machine back to your desk and log in and check the portal fax status. It really is literally a matter of minutes. When you fax in your transaction and you receive confirmation of completion, that means your machine and talk to our machine and our machine has received it. You can go immediately to the pending payments for me screen, click on the actions tab and check the fax status at that point. And it should indicate right there, the received date of today, immediately.
Okay, so if there was like a bad fax transmission, it would say something like that on the portal?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't tell you if we didn't receive it. It only indicates if we have received it. So if that received date field is blank, then that's your indication that it was not received in process.
Or what if it was just like a bad fax, like it didn't come out or something was blocked, whatever, you know, anything that could possibly go wrong with sending a fax. It was received, but maybe it wasn't, maybe you didn't have all the necessary documentation that you needed, that's all.
Okay, so two things, just to be clear. When sure. you, let's say you have 10 pages, you sent your transmission, you received confirmation that everything was okay. That means the actual technical transaction of faxing from one machine to the next occurred successfully. When we received it, however, the last two pages of those 10 pages were not clear. Let's say the font was too small or the print was too light, and so by the time we received it, it was updated into our system. It's not legible. The payment specialist reviewing your work case will have us send one of those outreach messages to you, letting you know that, you know, the last two pages of your transmission were not legible and we need to have you resend additional pay stubs. If for some reason you had three payment requests that you're working on and somehow you mixed up, you know, pay stubs for the first one with the second one and somehow the documentation doesn't match the work claim for that fax cover sheet. Again, there'll be an outreach if the same payment specialist is not reviewing those multiple work cases, they may figure that out themselves and be able to adjust the supporting documents with the appropriate work case and fix it for you. But if not, again, we'll have an outreach message sent to you to say, hey, it looks like you included the wrong evidence with the wrong work case and we need to have you resend it to us. So, you know, whether the issue is a technical issue where the transmission was not sent correctly, or the issue is related to the fact that we did receive something, it's just not the right something, we'll send a follow-up. So the fax status is simply to let you know that we did receive something, and that fax status screen is showing the date that we received something. And if that date field is blank, then we didn't receive anything.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Eugenia Cox. Eugenia, your line is open.
Hi, it's Eugenia again.
Hi, welcome back.
I just wanted to respond to the questions with regards to VR closure.
Okay, great.
When, you know, our role as VR is to help people go back to work, basically at whatever work means to them. So whether we're employing somebody full-time, half-time, 2 hours a week, and we put them in employment status in whatever work they're doing, we are required to monitor them on the job for at least 90 days. After the 90-day mark, they can continue monitoring them and keep the case open, or they usually close the case, and that would be closed successfully after that 90-day. It doesn't matter how much they're working. It just matters that they're working. So so that person's question was, does it matter if how much they're working, if it's, that determines successful or unsuccessful? That has no bearing.
Right.
So it's the successful closure if we close them employed after the 90-day monitoring period.
Thank
if
you, Eugenia.
Mm-hmm. If they're closed prior to that 90-day monitoring period, then that case is considered unsuccessful.
Okay.
Regardless of whether they're working or not.
Thank you, Eugenia. I thought that it was not a matter of how much, but the period, I guess, the 90 days is the issue here, how long
yeah.
it was working. Okay, thank you so much.
That makes it difficult for us to hand off quite a few of our clients. You know, they may be working 2, 4, you know, 5 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
and that might not be anybody that an employment network would want to take on.
Okay.
So that's why it's, you know, it's got to be somebody that's closer up there to the levels they need to be able to do a partnership.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thanks again for that clarification, Eugenia.
Mm-hmm.
And your next question comes from the line of Bernard Hicklick. Bernard, your line is open.
Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
Hi there, Bernard.
My question is actually pretty simple. It's about the e-pay.
Mm-hmm.
When this system goes into effect on the 29th, does it actually automatically check both outcomes as well as milestones to determine if any payments are due anybody?
Okay, on this, what we're doing right now, beginning in July, the system will be looking basically for earnings and create a file for us to work. We will be looking at phase one, phase two, milestones, as well as outcomes. The system will also automatically process reconciliation payments after we process outcome number 12. So in answer to your question, ePay will cover all payments.
Okay, so in response to that, we still need to put in a payment request, do we not?
No. When we do ePay, you do not have to do that at all. If we have earnings posted to the system and the beneficiary meets all the other requirements, we will make a payment. You do not have to make a payment request, submit a payment request.
What you will see is in your reports through the portal, you will see claims, work cases for payments that were processed through the ePay review process.
Thank you. That actually solves a myriad of problems from my end of things.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's automation at its best, we hope, and that's the plan. Make it easier for you, easier for us, and, you know, allow you to focus on assisting beneficiaries.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for an audio question, press the star followed by the one. At this time, there are no further audio questions, though.
Okay. Well, Deborah, are there any questions in the chat room that we can discuss and address until someone else has an audio question?
There is a question from Lisa. If we have a consumer that we haven't gotten payment on since August 2014 because they will not provide pay stubs, the earnings are not established in the portal, and there are no earnings on the work number, will we get paid on it with the new ePay process? Lisa, what I can tell you is if the earnings are in any Social Security system and the beneficiary meets the requirements or the criteria for the next payment, that should be available, yes, we will make the payment through ePay. The other question came from Judy. Why are so many Social Security offices telling beneficiaries that they do not have to report their wages to them monthly? We are told to tell beneficiaries to report their earnings to their local field office to help alleviate the beneficiaries getting into overpayment situations. Judy, I cannot answer that question. I know we've heard it over and over again from a number of ENs, which is why we invite ENs to submit any pay stubs or whatever into Maximus, and we will key that information into Social Security system, because you are absolutely correct, especially for SSI. They do need to report those earnings. The only way Social Security knows what earnings a person makes is pretty much the first source would be through the individuals. Of course, if beneficiaries file income taxes at the end of the year, we get that information later through by way of IRS, and there's some information that employers report, but really the beneficiaries, to avoid overpayment situations, they really do need to report monthly.
Okay, excellent. Those were good questions through the chat room. Anything else that we haven't addressed in the chat room, Deborah?
No, I think that's pretty much it. We had a couple questions about SEI, not SEI, about our employer-prepared statements. So
you responded to those?
Those, I basically said, basically the ENs wanted to know whether or not they could get a spreadsheet from an employer with the earnings listed. And I said, you know, that's fine, but we still need to show, the employer's name needs to be listed, the employer needs to sign off on it, or a representative, a payroll clerk, or someone from a company. And they also need to make the statement and affirm that all the withholdings required by law have been made. That way we know it's a regular employer, it's not a contractor or a possible SEI case, and we can process that. So that was the question.
Okay.
For that.
Great. Okay, Shay, do we have any additional audio questions at this time?
We do have another question from the line of Eugenia Cox. Eugenia, your line is open.
I bet you're sick of hearing from me.
Hi, Eugenia. Welcome back.
Yeah. I just wanted to put in a plug for the National Employment Network Association coming up in September. There's going to be several VR agencies that are going to be there. I saw some questions about whether we're doing partnership plus and things like that. We'll be talking about those kind of things, and it's a good conference to go to meet other employment networks and also connect with some state VR agencies. And it's September 9th, 10th, and 11th. It's in New Orleans. And if you want more information on the conference, you can go to ninaticket.org.
Okay. Good plug. Thank you for that. ninaticket.org for more information about the conference in September on the 9th through 11th. And New Orleans is a nice place to be at that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else, Shay?
I have one question in the chat from Yasmin Shoemate, and it says, I have two beneficiaries who would like to work in the MMJ industry, which is cash only. How do I get paid, and how would you find payment? First of all, there should be no employer giving cash only out, because that employer is not making the required withholdings. It's not the beneficiary's best interest, because if taxes, FICA taxes aren't being withheld or whatever, and they are working, that reduces the amount of their retirement benefits and any other benefits. So really, it's illegal. So really, you should not encourage, not that you are, but try to encourage these beneficiaries to find other sources of work, legitimate work, where they're getting a pay stub, where they're having withholdings made, so their Social Security and Medicare taxes are being paid on their behalf.
Very good. Thanks for that clarification. Shay, are there any additional audio questions?
There are no further audio questions at this time.
Okay. Very good. All right. And there's no pending questions in the chat room. So at this point, then, I want to take the time to just thank everyone for joining us for today's call. We do hope that the information shared was helpful for you. We thank you for all of the great questions that you've asked through the phone line and in the chat room as well. Certainly, if you have any follow-up questions or suggestions for future topics for our call, please send those to the EN Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.com, and we will certainly consider those for future discussions. Now, next month, well, let me share a couple of additional things. Next week, Tuesday, our Ticket Training Tuesday session on August 4th at 1 o'clock Eastern Time is open to all ENs and VRs if you'd like to join us. We will be providing more details on how to submit a payment request, via the ticket portal, as well as another review of the manual process. So please join us next Tuesday for that session. It is a repeat of the session we did earlier this month. And again, there's a lot more details there on how to use the ticket portal to submit your request and review of the manual processes. Our next All-EN Payments call will be on Tuesday, August 25th at 3 o'clock Eastern Time, and we hope that you join us next month as well. Again, thanks, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.